Thank you, Paul. So I've really enjoyed listening to all those lovely people whom I used to know and still enjoy. This is called Hold Your Horses. For ancients, self-control was held in high esteem, notably the Stoics, who seemed to be serene when faced with major crises, never at a loss. A simple analogy gets their point across. Take a carriage and horses, no doubt two will do. Make sure the coachman has an unimpeded view. The carriage represents the body of a man. In those days, females didn't figure in their plan. Horses, the emotions, powerful and dangerous. The coachman, trying to make the ride okay for us, stands for the intellect and knows what's to be done. But inside sits the master, who is the only one who really calls the shots. He represents the will, makes his presence felt. Though he might not know the drill, the coachman may protest and tell him to hold tight, explain about those potholes hidden out of sight, but a pig-headed master can do what he likes, even order his coachman to double his strikes on the perspiring horses and make them obey. His impatience won't tolerate any delay. The will can lord it over both body and heart, assuming the intellect can play its part. But clarity can fade if feelings twist the gut, make the body so lost it sinks into a rut. Let's say a wayward horse stampedes into a ditch, throws the master sideways into a violent pitch. Yelling at his coachman won't help in any way. It just shows that the will has a limited sway. The analogy shows it can still fit the bill if the will and the mind work in harmony still. And when fractious emotions don't torment the flesh, we may see self-sufficiency triumph afresh. Philosophers have faults, but if we scan his quips, Marcus Aurelius could give us a few tips. To do the decent thing, no matter what the cost, see the bigger picture, not dwell in what's been lost. All this presupposes that basic needs are met, and we've made no commitments that we might regret. While the heedless continue freewheeling through life, free will, used judiciously, can mitigate strife. That's it.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks for that. And next up, we have Matt Mooney.
Okay, I have a poem called Cuchulainn's Sons for you. It's a hurling poem. Not sure what other kind of poem would I read tonight after a great day's outing yesterday by Cork. Who play their way into this year's All-Ireland final against Kilkenny yesterday. So good luck to Cork, but this is my choice for them. Cuchulainn's Sons. In the annals of Cuchulainn's Sons appear the names of our ancestors. Time of landlords and evictions, when our Gaelic games were spawned, while we waited for the dawn of freedom. Floating on a tide of national pride from the 19th to the 20th century. barefoot players on pitches improvised, tournaments and marching bands of brass and reed and fife and drum, the baronies hurling the troubled years away with commands shaped like commogues, the flying slither a harbinger of peace, sending shivers down the spine of time, raising up our ancient race to feed again our rightful nationhood. Running on this fever in the blood, leaving to posterity, dexterity and style, present on the field of play today in the genes of great-grandchildren, accurate as them in every game, in their aim from center field or sideline cut. And we cheer them from the stands, for they are Cuchulain's youngest sons. Thank you.
That's a great poem. Thank you, Matt. Very fitting, absolutely.
Thank you.
For our Coventry guests who don't know, and for our American guests, etc., overseas, from other countries, Cork beat their age-old rivals yesterday, Kilkenny, to get into the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship final. So the whole city is on a high at the moment from that. And if anyone has a few extra tickets to the match, I would love to hear from you. Because I know they're like gold. Thank you for that, Matt. Oh yeah, and of course, I mean, if you look at the cover of the book, I mean, a lot of our Coventry guests will probably remember that statue, because that's the statue of Christy Ring on the right there, as you come off the plane and out to the cars. He's kind of right in front of you. Christy Ring, of course, being, you know, Cork's most famous hurler. All right, so enough about hurling. It's a poetry session, you say. Let's move on to our next poet, Janet Smith.
Yep. Okay. Wasps. It was August we noticed the wasps crawling out of cupboards, sagging in cutlery drawers, lying dead on the counter. Wasps drowned in small puddles on sinks and in bathtubs. September, we shook them out of coffee jars. When we opened cans, they shambled sluggish as though drunk on the gin in our closets. October, each dressing was an exercise in caution. Eyes and ears tumbling from cardigans turned out of pockets, sly bumbling stingers in threes and fours gathered on light shades, inched out of waste pipes. The summer endured with each slow dying. On our tabletops, yellow stripes losing their power to shock. We barely glance at them now. Each crawl space, each window ledge, its own small place of reverence. The summer is endless now. Wasps limp along, dying slowly in fives and in sixes in every room. Out on our doorsteps, they are keeling over like young girls in stations, under doorways, up stairwells, and still the harvesting is not over. Sorry to be so cheerful.
No, superb. Thank you, Janet. Certainly a poem for our times.
Actually written before the pandemic hit. Just before.
Prophetic. Thank you. Next up, we have Jeff Cottrell. Hey, Jeff.
Hello. All right, this is called Simpatica Books, Inc. Dear Mr. Orwell, thank you very much for your interest in Simpatica Books, Inc. We have reviewed your submitted manuscript, The Animal Farm, and we have decided, regrettably, that it is not the right fit for our lineup. Although your novella is well-written and has a few interesting ideas, we feel that it also has some serious issues and needs a lot of work. Our main problem with your manuscript is the characters, specifically that none of them is very likable. There isn't a single one a reader can root for. We feel strongly that main characters in fiction must always be likable and never have any flaws or do anything the reader might disagree with. Most of the pigs in Animals Farm are so nasty and power-obsessed, and they do many cruel things to the other animals. They kill them, they lie to them and manipulate them, they betray them. How is a person supposed to relate to that kind of behavior? Nobody's like that in real life. And even the animals who are victims of the abuse, you don't feel much for them either, Mr. Orwells. They don't fight back or try to win the day. They just take all the oppression passively. That's so depressing. A reader needs to cheer somebody on to be a hero, but your book doesn't deliver that. Our other big issue with your manuscript is the story itself, that it's just so unbelievable and unrealistic. A group of farm animals drive the owner away and take over the farm? A little far-fetched, Mr. Wells. A little hard to imagine. Animals can get a little rambunctious now and then, but they could never take over a whole farm like that. And even if they did, it's hard to believe they would run the farm so poorly. There's so much corruption among the pigs that the whole thing turns into a virtual dictatorship. I don't think that could happen even with human beings, let alone with animals. You're not giving the reader much credit. Our team at Sympatica Books, Inc. is confused about your goals for Animal Farms. It's too violent and intense for a children's book, and it's too dark and pessimistic for a fantasy. We can't imagine what kind of demographic you're aiming for or why anyone would want to spend their free time with these characters. But I have some good news. Our focus group of beta readers has come up with some constructive suggestions that may help you improve your book. First, instead of all those mean pigs, why not have one really nice pig? And give the nice pig a friend or two. I think it's sad that you never gave the animals any good friendships, but I bet the reader would love to see one. Maybe the nice pig has a cute little spider friend who weaves nice messages about the pig in her web, and that sends the pig on some fun adventures. Don't you think that would make a good kid's book? I think so. And maybe the nice pig learns how to herd sheep, and he goes on to win a sheep herding competition. That would send an uplifting message about believing in yourself. Another issue? Our beta readers don't like the catchphrase you gave to Boxer the horse. I will work harder? Nobody's ever going to quote that. We came up with a better catchphrase. A horse is a horse, of course, of course. See, now that's catchy and fun. That's what a reader wants. The point I'm trying to make. After the years pass and we're all rotting in the ground, the generations after us will remember only one thing about our literature. It's marketability. Please keep working hard at your writing, and maybe someday you'll get a lot better at it and write something worth publishing, Mr. Orson. Something with a fun plot and a likable hero. Like that nice Nancy Drew. Now she's a plucky little one. Why don't you give us a character like that? That would be swell. Sincerely, Sympatica Books, Inc. Books for people who don't want a challenge. So that's me.
That's fabulous, Brian. Thank you. Thanks, Jeff. Super satire. Unfortunately, I imagine Sympatico is still going.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. I'm running into a bunch of them trying to get my book out there.
Thanks for that. Okay, next up we have Ray Hanrahan.
Okay, you can all hear me, I hope. Okay, very good. Okay, the poem I have tonight now is one that I was exploring, I suppose, rhythm and stress in the poems I write. And I wrote this as an exercise off the back of reading the Wikipedia article on scansion. So I hope you like it, and I hope people don't take it as some kind of epitaph, even though it kind of structures like one. So don't worry, I still plan to be around for a while. It's called Written Word. What is my art? Written word, my desultory avocation. Am I a fool on the gloaming's ground, searching for affirmation? What I have to hand, I dare to wield, I do not know how well. So tell me you, whose eyes read here, the verdict, good or ill.
Great, so thank you. Thanks, Ray, and great to see you again. Hopefully we'll see more of you.
Yeah, depending on productivity.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, next up we have Catherine Ronan. Hey, Catherine.
Hi, hi, Paul. Hi, everyone. My poem is called Insomnia. I leave you in dawn, moon. No questions. Universe to yourself. Nine cycles of life. Tissue in your pocket. I am beyond sleep. Painted caves. Tattoos and jam. Silent thunder. Jellyfish truth. Capture childhood in salty buckets. Our brothers are dead, but we still see them, open-eyed attic of stars.
Lovely poem. Thank you, Catherine. For those of you who'd like to hear more, Catherine, again, this is plug number four, I think. Bonus plug. Catherine will be reading on Thursday night. I believe it's 8 o'clock, not 8:30. It was my mistake. That's Lime Square Poets. You can look them up on Facebook and you can find the link via their website. So best of luck for that reading, Catherine.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, and next up, onto the open mic, all the way from Argentina. It's great to see her again. Melissa Mourinho. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, hey, everyone. How are you? I'm sorry I joined you so late, but I just finished working, so this is the best I can do. Thanks for having me. I will read a poem. I'm working on the translations of some of the poems from my third published book, which is a tribute to Elizabeth Short, sadly known as the Black Dahlia. I don't know if you know her story. She was murdered a long time ago. So this poem is Elizabeth Short. I was born in Massachusetts one summer's day. I was the third of five daughters. The Great Depression of 29 ruined Daddy. It gave him the push to leave. He abandoned us. 1 year later, he left his car on the Charlestown Bridge and jumped. Police said, probably suicide. His body wasn't found. He just faded like the side stream smoke from a cigarette put out by a shoe on the sidewalk. A cigarette put out by a father. Did I cry for Daddy? I don't know. I was barely five when he left us. His silent death as a gift, a weird joke. Daddy returned from death a few years back. Mom didn't want to see him again. I did. You don't bury your dead twice. I left home to look for him, to find my glow in California. I wanted to shine. Where were you my whole life? Such a brief life together. I left. Did you cry for me, being so close and not coming to your little Betty's funeral? Who else could identify my body but you, whose hands and sex had made me? What did you make of me? I walked the streets so long, darling, I've sought the kindness of men, those unknown who stare and offer me their arm. Money. I have spent days of hunger. It's hurting my ankles. There's a segment missing from my height. Remember those dahlias I fastened to my hair with ebony barrettes? Wasn't I gorgeous in your eyes back then? What would have happened if that airplane hadn't fallen down with you, with me after all, if we had gotten married one afternoon under an arc of wisteria? How can it hurt this much? Why can't it end? His eyes weighed on me. You might well remember the fright, locked in my smeared green, the torment nailed to my face, but it's not mine. It is not God's work, that terrible grimace, forcibly torn away from me. It is not mine. That is the smile of my killer. He's still laughing in my face. Do not leave me thrown into oblivion. The archives are dying and I die again with them every time. Have you seen my body? Have you actually seen me? My name is Elizabeth Short. Thanks.
That's a fabulous elegy, Melissa. Thank you so much for that, and for bringing Elizabeth Short to our attention. I didn't know about her at all. The Black Dahlia. It's a very sad story, but very beautiful elegy. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on now to our next open mic reader, all the way from Coventry, Martin Brown.
Thanks again, Paul. I think this lightened the mood a bit. I mean, hard one to follow that. But, there's just aren't enough poems about domestic appliances, and this is one of my attempts to rectify that. This is called My Washing Machine Dream. In my washing machine dream, I came up clean. I crept in dull and dirty, but clambered out pristine. For I was a filthy miscreant, but water, wash and soap allowed me back into the world, whiter than a pope. When others saw my aura, all bright and shiny clean, they joined the growing clamour to use my washing machine. Oh, let us be as bright as you, they begged of me en masse. So I crammed them in, pressed extra spin, and watched them through the glass. Like underwater angels, they tumbled round and round, and when the cycle finished, every one had drowned. I hauled them out and hung them out upon my washing line. They flapped and fluttered in the breeze, which made them look just fine. But each had died, and when they dried, I folded them with love and placed them in my laundry bin, safely stored above my washing machine, which I unplugged and firmly shut the door. Now others slump in mucky clumps across my laundry floor. I warn them off, but that won't stop them wanting to be clean, in case they're seen within this dream about my washing machine.
Fabulous. Thank you. Thanks, Martin. I've got a serious vision of a washing machine turning around in my head right now and all the rhythms that come with that. It's a perfect subject for a poem and very, very uplifting. Thank you. Okay. We will move on now to, we've got just three readers left, unless anyone else would like to sign up. Next is Kemi George Simpson. Hi, Kemi.
Hi, my internet's not great.
Looks good.
Yeah.
Sounds so good.
In the winter festival, I was inspired by Tonga Essen Martin. It reminded me I come from quite a mixed background. And so the estate that I was partly brought up in, it was quite a difficult place. And so I just wrote this poem And it's quite a personal poem, but I'll read it anyway. So it's called The Graveyard. So there was no landscape piece, no hearse or obvious mourning, no reminiscing headstones, though misery reeks and horror tales pave. Like unraveled ancient Egyptian aristocracy wreaking vengeance on reggae melody, your auntie was in the precinct, bumping and grinding her ghosts, rum cured out of body, embodied in her leotard, singing. The sober too weary to look, shame colored so many eyes, her raucous catharsis, no surprise. Menacing desperation tuned and scented the air, urinating entrepreneurs, territorially marked apartment block stairs, drumming up business with soft whispers, hush, hush, hush. Hippie and yuppie tires sound the same as they purchase, young black males subjugated by free enterprise, avail recreational oppressions to others, never owning the means of production, so they are hunted. Police, prison, probation. Police, prison, probation. Youth merry-go-round institutions, psychiatric and penal carousels beat rhythms of slow extinction. A danger, a section, medication. A danger, a section, medication. Bewildering, stagnating, addicting. Bewildering, stagnating, addicting. Hoodwinked neighbors shuffle to similar rhythms. Hooked to the beats, hooked to the meds, hooked to the streets. The council estate bleeds. Paratrophic setups feed. The assimilating, slowly dying. Cruel beats, weary. Blocked opportunities, weary. Desperation, wearies. Weary goes septic, turns full-blown psychotic. Psychotic throttles hope and drags her through concrete. They are trying to kill me. Ligactyl calms. Palliative care for the community hospice. White-coated diagnosis coffins, laying us down to rest. Exterminating the undead. Here, we are perfectly placed to disappear.
Thank you, Kemi. That is a very fine poem. It's got gorgeous rhythms to it, and it packs a political punch, you know. Yeah, you're definitely on the right track with that. Fantastic work, really. Congratulations. Okay, we just have three more readers left, unless we have more signing up. We have Massimo Lavelle.
My apologies before you get on to your next reader. I must go. I have children to put to bed, and they are way past their bedtime.
Well, sorry, Lord Mayor. I should have said to you ages ago, you can leave whenever you like. I
hope not at all. Not at all. It's been very interesting to listen to you. Thank you very much to every single one of you, I'm delighted to launch it this evening. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much. Ihoa.
Ihoa. God bless. Bye-bye.
All right, superb. Massimo, you're up.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always an honor to be here, and I always enjoy all the beautiful poetry that you all share. So thank you. So this piece, I know how late it is there, so I'll try to say this piece quickly so it doesn't go on too long. But yeah, thank you. Always thank you for having me. So my love is a wall that surrounds me, where no one in this world knows about me. I see the world, but it can't see without me, by the same grace that my blindness allows me. Like a child, I just want to sleep soundly and leave all my dreams where they found me, where the mares of the night cannot hound me, and sheep that I count in my sleep cannot count me. As I pray quietly and cry loudly, as I cry quietly and pain proudly, as I laugh openly in life's bounty, as I think deeply and grow roundly. I reach toward the skies, but they cloud me. I even fall to the ground, but it grounds me. I look for myself, it surrounds me. So I love in this house so that love may come house me. But I still remember when I never knew anything, a pure mirror resembling a new world I had entered in. But my days keep on lengthening. Their space and their time keep on measuring. I retrace my steps for the referencing if the beginning is where the end's resting in. My life's not a flaw that needs fixing. It's more like a lock with a key that needs fitting. Or maybe a puzzle, a piece that needs fitting, or a piece that seems missing. But really, just a man who needs love right now to keep living. Sometimes I feel so sad, but the heavens and the earth still stand, which maybe doesn't seem so bad when viewed in a scheme so grand. Like sunlight in blue sky clad, gives life but gives no command. And by the same grace, I am glad that I am covered but do not understand. Innocence, innocence, not just ignorance, there's a big difference. Innocence, when I accept it, I am it, but soon as I think it, it isn't. Everything big began little. What is complex once began is so simple. The size of a child may double, then triple, but they first began and the eye is a twinkle. A trillion years for one riddle to count all the atoms inside of a thimble. Yet worlds that we know and we love could be crippled if one single atom should break in the middle. The force of creation is so great that without grace, it might fall from its own weight. The path of true knowledge is so straight that without love, it's as good as a closed gate. The path of true wisdom is so straight that without love, it's as good as a stone slate. The force of our spirit is so great that without our mistakes, excuse me, we might die from our pure state. But look, I am not any more pure than the warmth of a horse's manure. But even manure plus a seed and a spore can grow a whole garden that reaches your door. But my garden is doorless, windowless, but with walls like a fortress. Castles are guarded by soldiers with torches, while even the poor sleep with dogs on their porches. But no need for dogs where no door is. My line is secure because it's cordless. But I feel a certain unsureness that maybe I'm not as secure as my fort is. Yeah, sure, my garden is gorgeous, but just defending it takes more importance. My mind turns my fears into forces till soon I am fighting with foes who are formless. Just to protect what is precious, I block all the entrances, even the exits. Now I'm left with no entrance or exits. It's like my defensiveness left me defenseless. But maybe we need our defenses, just like a garden needs fences. But maybe the strength of a fence is only how precious the thing it protects is. For the sake of my beauty, actually, for the sake of your beauty, I paint myself ugly so you cannot view me. Because I'm worried that you will accuse me of looking much better than who I am truly. But for the sake of my beauty, I paint myself pretty, so maybe you'll choose me. Hoping though looks might elude me, it was by the garden inside that you knew me. Thank you all so much. Peace.
Massimo, I think you've blown everyone away once again. Honestly, you're an absolute master, and it's just really, really beautiful to hear such well-crafted work and such meaningful work, you know. But it's on all levels. It's got the lyrics, it's got the rhythm, it's got It's got the wisdom. It's got, you know, a lot of thought in there, and just gorgeous, really, really gorgeous work. So thank you. Great to see you. Thanks, Massimo. Okay, we still have a few. I've seen we've had another sign up. That's great. Next up, we have Sue Blue.
Well, how to follow that up? How to follow that up? Jesus, Massimo, you're a star. I have two poems in front of me, one very short and one that celebrates Cork. I think it fits the night. So the first one is actually called Twin, and I've only just finished it. It's for my new kitten that you might have seen cross the screen in between. She's a twin. And so this is the poem about her, or for her actually, written to her. Twin. You sit in meditation, back turned to me, the mirror in front of you still, big eyes in wonder as you silently speak to your reflected other. Where are you, sis? How can I get through to you now? You claw into the nothingness behind the screen, missing your twin, your big eyes wandering in meditation. Your quiet question receives no answer from the silent screen. So if I may do Lights Along the Lee, Paul, is that okay with you? Brilliant. So just to celebrate Cork for the night that's in it, I've never been part of the Coventry Exchange yet, maybe to say, I don't know, whatever happens along the way. Yeah, I do celebrate Cork a lot in my poetry, and this is Lights Along the Lee. The dark cover of night envelops the city lights. I stop to watch the spiders in their magic webs, glittering against the street lamps between the steel bars of the banister along the bridge. The River Lee lies still, only a quiver reveals the mirage on the water. Mirror of a grown age-old town, disguised in modern buildings and neon lights. Along the low concrete quay wall, I like to pause and lean over the rounded crown, admiring the river, this keeper of time, its timeless reflection trembling in the slightest wind, ripples in the black silver surface, a film strip recording the pulse of Cork life. The Lee not too long or too broad, with quays not too high nor too low, not too long to walk, and the nights alive with culture's beating heart. Looking back along this black silver band, reflecting the city night, it feels a little bit like Paris. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, it's, you know, Cork is a gift that keeps giving for us in terms of poets, you know. I mean, we are literally drowning in poets over here. We've never struggled to find poets to send to Coventry. And it's actually, it's a great treat to be able to send poets to Coventry. You know, it's quite the, privilege, really, to do so, you know. I mean, especially when the majority of poets who you send to Coventry don't know what it means to be sent to Coventry, and you've got to be sent to Coventry to discover what it means to be sent to Coventry. But they've never come back, you know, without having an absolutely great time. So, you know, we plan on sending many, many more, and on welcoming many, many more. So long may it happen. Thank you, Sue. Okay. The penultimate reader, I think, I know Mags is struggling to get back in. She's been coming in and she's really struggling. If she does manage to get in, we'll be able to listen to a piece from Mags. But it looks like our penultimate reader this evening is Cedric Bigond. Cedric?
Yeah. Can you hear me properly? Because I removed the headphones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. So this one is measured response. 2.5, an inch in centimeters, in between grades on the thermometer. 2.5 short of a true arbiter, the almighty God that never was, to watch over the match between man and his twisted nature. 2.5 degrees of the right direction, an experiment thrown off, a future thrown away, in a butterfly effect, sometimes flapped a pair of lips, somewhere will die 2.5 million. Maybe at one point, 7 was a holy number, but catastrophe arises when, in a bid for grid, hierarchy replaces communion. When 2.5 offer a number to make the census number and condemn all to oblivion.
Superb. Thank you, Cedric. Okay, yep. Once again, we're down to our next penultimate reader. We might have another penultimate reader after that at the moment. And it's actually, I think, my fault, Doc. I didn't see your name in the list. So next up, please, can we welcome Doc Channing? I think you're still on mute there, Doc. We can't hear you.
My apologies. This is titled Time. Time flows, twists, turns, bends. Its passage, inexact, imprecise. Its existence, a menage of moments. Moments experienced in intersections, beginnings, endings, as ephemerals, vital, dynamic, shifting, changing, shaped, reshaped, created, destroyed. Moments woven of random, moments of infinity, stretching through the multiverse. Time beyond imagining, time with no beginning, time with no end, time which is and is not. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you very much. And next, and possibly our last reader, not sure yet, Margaret O'Regan.
I'm going to read a poem by Anne MacDonald, and it's from her collection, and it's called Crow's Books, Anne MacDonald. Now, she titles this A Very Zoom Affair, and she says in brackets, for the poet and activist Margaret O'Regan. She said, I inspired it. It's very funny, this, because I can't read it without laughing, so. A very Zoom affair. She wished she had thought to put a nicer dress on as she clicked on Zoom. She had taken a YouTube class on how to minimize the glare on your glasses from your laptop. Then read a poem about how she enjoyed being alone, but also loved meeting new people, and how she hated sheeple, and how individuality was her thing. He read about what he had to bring to a new relationship. He took down the Man United poster from the wall of his son's bedroom where he did the calls and replaced it with a print. Then read a poem about still having a spring in his step and a zing in his homemade COVID margaritas. She read in front of her kitchen window with her pots of basil and mint. complimenting the blue of her new top. He could not stop reading about when he travelled as a young man and how ageing had made him wiser and more open to his feminine side. She told her friends that from what she could see, he was a big ride. She started wearing perfume on the online open mic nights, dimming the lights so that her wrinkles were depleted. He read about how proud he was and how it was the right of everybody, woman or man, to an education. She read about how she loved the grounds of Trinity College in the winter. He read about how he didn't even feel the splinter in his heart now that his partner had moved on, and how he longed for a relationship with a woman of culture. She read about a previous relationship with an energy vulture and how she now embraced the empty nest. He read about how he had used yoga to lay all his demons to rest. She read about shopping online and how not all bullets need guns. He read about using puns to deliver a punch in a poem. She read about nights when she would be alone. He read about being on his own in his king-size bed. She dreamed of his words getting around in her head. He wished to fuck the barbers would open. She read about coping without getting her highlights done and how she was happy to be grey. The day she knew the jig was up was when she wore suspenders on the open mic under her leggings and used her contact lenses to get rid of the glare, when into the view of the screen came her husband's hand wrapped around a cup of coffee, his wedding ring glinting in the sun from the kitchen window. "That's for yourself doing the poetry," the husband said, her face flushed, fire engine red. She composed herself and read about ships in the night. He read about ships that had just fucking sailed. She wailed loudly off camera that she was only having a bit of fun, and wasn't she entitled to just one little bit of the house to herself? He decided not to read at the next open mic, but appeared on the call beside a photo of him, the wife, and a Christmas elf, his copy of Ulysses strategically placed on a hastily erected IKEA shelf. And MacDonald.